we're ready to go.
We're rolling.
Lindsay Clancy. You heard of her?
Yeah, unfortunately.
We're getting right into it. So this case is still, the jury can't make up its mind.
Twice now they've said they can't reach a unanimous verdict.
Yeah. You know, this is what happens when you let women on juries, obviously.
Well, you know, I support them being full citizens, but with rights come responsibilities.
That's right.
Although this is not a unanimous opinion in this case, clearly.
Unfortunately not. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this again because I haven't had strong feelings about I haven't followed it, you know, with the kind of rapt sort of attention that everyone else in America seems to be following it.
It is.
You
the,
turn
like,
on cable news, it's the
trial of the summer. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Obviously, a horrible situation.
Why don't you catch the viewers?
Yeah,
at home
three beautiful children murdered, strangled to death, I believe, by their mother. That part is not really in contention. She's being prosecuted and has basically the defense suggests she suffered from postpartum psychosis.
Okay.
She was delusional. She'd gone insane. She was on a bunch of different prescription medications, many conflicting with each other, and she'd seen different medical people. And so they're at fault. She's not at fault. The psychosis is at fault. That's what the trial's about.
Yeah.
It just seems like totally obvious to me that she is guilty and responsible for her actions. But I was having a discussion about this with someone. I won't say who it is, but it's someone I esteem in kind of liberty circles who has pretty good opinions on a lot of stuff.
Well, thank you.
It was not you, no. It was a lady,
okay.
If that's relevant. She was utterly convinced that Lindsay Clancy should be found not guilty because she thinks the evidence is compelling that she was under a delusion. And so, I mean, maybe this is legally correct, that you're not responsible for your actions when under a psychotic delusion.
Yeah, I
disagree with that. But,
yeah, I find
maybe that,
that
is legally the way it is.
No pun intended. I find that in a completely insane take.
I do as well.
Because it's not, okay, so maybe, I don't know, again, I haven't been following this too closely, so I don't know exactly what the charges are, you know, because different forms of murder and manslaughter come with different levels of culpability and intent.
Sure.
And so if it's just like a singular or three murder one charges or something like that, maybe this doesn't meet that very exacting definition. But if the, you know, surely there is some lower second degree murder, whatever charge that she should very clearly be convicted of.
Yeah.
And I just don't, you know, this was a very gruesome and very, regardless of her mental state, like just the physical details of the crime, a very deliberate crime as well.
Right.
And so to say that you should just. You get off scot-free because you were under
medication. And the deliberate part of it is that she sent her husband away on an errand so that she would be alone with the children so she could kill them.
Yeah.
And
well, how much does the delusion then cover if you're like
exactly.
Oh, it also covered this, you know, forethought and this planning and this premeditation.
That's what I'm getting at exactly.
Is it just a get out of jail free card then?
Right.
Yeah.
And look, I don't think, for me, the purpose of criminal justice is not really punishment as much. Like, there's some deranged conservative commentators are like, you know, hang her, that's the only way to send a lesson to, okay, we don't want like gratuitous violence it's not about retribution.
Yeah.
But I do take a little bit seriously the idea that, okay, so then you're saying she's a delusional, crazy person who can go to elaborate lengths to arrange the murder of other people, and you want her to be freed?
Yeah,
right. Is she no harm to the community? Is that, we can get a guarantee on that? I guess I don't really care if she's incarcerated for life in a prison or in a facility, it doesn't have to be like, I don't want her to like suffer in a dungeon, but I do not think she should be a free person following this, right?
No.
I don't think she should be able to come and go from a no security mental facility at her leisure either.
No, of course not. In
right?
fact, I really don't like, this is the problem, is once you start to kind of medicalize crime, you see this with a lot of sex offenders too.
Yeah.
Is, okay, they have some sort of mental disorder, therefore they're not criminally culpable, but they're going to be sent to a mental institution instead. It's like, that's can also be an injustice. So like you're saying, okay, this person isn't criminally responsible, but therefore has even fewer rights because they must be, you know, locked away in a mental asylum for the rest of their lives too, right?
I'm not a,
you know, foaming at the mouth, we must hang people in public
kind of
guy.
Yeah, I'm not either at all.
But I do think, like, part of the point of a criminal justice system is to meter out justice to people who've committed heinous acts.
Right.
And I think that goes beyond just like the narrow goal of deterrence, because there's all sorts of circumstances I think you can think of where someone, you could be reason. I mean, this woman, she tried to kill herself after these grisly murders. She then paralyzed herself as a result. You could say, like, okay, well, she's not physically a threat to anyone now, but that's not enough. Like, justice demands more.
Yeah.
This is something I've kind of changed my mind on over time. And certainly in this case, I just don't.
Right.
I don't get how you can get to the point of saying there's, you know, you're rational enough to plan out this crime, be alone with the children, and then turn around and say, oh, well, she was suffering under a delusion, so now she should, you know.
I mean, a sentence of, like, 20 years or life reaches a point where I'm not invested in what, if it's good enough, right? 20 years would be good enough, probably, from my just totally subjective, I don't know what the statute requires. Yeah. Just like, what is this, what should be the, there has to be a consequence for doing something like this. And what I couldn't get past, and I was bringing this in my discussion, it's like, I can accept that people can be not responsible for their actions for a variety of reasons in a moment, but you have some responsibility, I think, to not end up in a situation where you're not in control of your actions.
Yeah.
We would recognize that in any other context. I mean, if I, drunk driving, you're not in control of your, and you could even say, the decision to drive when you're drinking is not one you're making in a fully in your capacity state, right? It sounds like a good idea under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Sounds like a great idea. That was a bad choice that you didn't make while fully on your faculties.
But you did go to the bar, drive to the bar and have a bunch of shots. Right. And that was your only way of getting
If you
home.
Are the kind of person that is going to be confident in their ability to drive when they're under the influence and is going to make that decision, even though they shouldn't, then you have a responsibility to handcuff yourself to the bar so you don't leave it, or give somebody else your car keys for the night, or what you have to take steps when you're not incapacitated to not arrive in that situation as a responsible citizen.
Right.
So in this case, she clearly had enough lucidity at some point. I mean, she was seeking medical interventions for these things. You have a duty to remove yourself from the ability to harm people, knowing you're going to pose a danger to people because of some looming psychological distress. Yeah. So I don't see how that, even if in the moment she's in a full-on delusion, do you know what I'm saying? I don't see how that abrogates your ability to not arrive in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. To make a religious analogy, there's this idea in Catholic thought where it's called, like, the occasion of sin, right? Where you put yourself in a position where the thing in of itself isn't inherently sinful, or maybe not a mortal sin, but it will lead you to commit mortal sins, and so therefore you should avoid it, right?
Right.
So, you know,
coveting your neighbor's husband.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't look at him then, you know, or don't be alone with him.
Yeah.
Your
neighbor, his husband, you know, their third, whatever's going on there.
Yeah. His neighbor's ass or whatever the exact biblical language is.
That sounds like an Aesop's fable. The man, his neighbor, and the ass.
alcohol, I think, is actually like a good good example of this, where it's like, okay, it's not sinful to have a few drinks. It is sinful to get stinking drunk. And if you can't have a few drinks without getting stinking drunk, then you can't have a few drinks, right?
Right.
I mean, people who are addicts deal with this all the time, right? You know, the kind of AA line is like, you know, I'm powerless to control my drinking or whatever. And, you know, we can talk about whether that's the correct formulation, but like the advice of AA then is like, okay, well then avoid your triggers, you know, avoid situations where it'll lead you to make more serious mistakes.
Yeah.
This seems like another example of that. Yeah. It's a real downgrading of, I don't know, just individual agency?
Right, because then on some level, nobody's responsible for anything.
Right,
I mean, we're all just influenced by the environmental factors, our own genetic predispositions, then we're in like a kind of Calvinist, all of our actions are already, you know, written into our behavior. And so what is the point of anything?
Right. Yeah.
It's really like the old free will discussion, gets very tedious very quickly.
You know who'd write a great essay about this case is Ayn Rand. And she would have no sympathy for this woman.
Oh, no, she would not.
I've been reading some of her later essays for a thing I'm working on for the magazine. It's just like, oh, man, just knives are out. Doesn't matter.
God, we love her.
Well,
that's a good woman.
Yeah.
But now, speaking of women who need to be absolutely punished to the fullest extent of the law possible.
Lock them up and throw away the key.
Because
talk
of the danger.
About abusive mothers. Oh, my goodness. This
because
is
of
a
the
terrible
danger,
case.
The children are threatened. We're being entirely facetious because this is an outrageous case in the opposite direction. That Lenore Skenazy, wonderful, wonderful contributor, part of the Reason family, writes about free-range parenting movement, people getting in trouble for allowing their children to have a even slight amount of the freedom over their own lives that that our parents and grandparents all enjoyed when they were kids, the legal regime to stop them, and even the social regime to –
To let the helicopter hover just a foot higher.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I edited Lenore's work at Reason for many years, so I'm extremely familiar with it. It's fantastic, and she's just fantastic. But she's got another one of those cases.
This is burning up our site right now, and it is truly remarkable, the details here.
Yes, so this is a woman in Virginia, lives in a gated community. Nice woman, married, actually somewhat familiar with our libertarian world. She worked for IJ.
Yeah, intern at the Institute for Justice.
She's pursuing a law degree.
She's a graduate degree in family studies
in
or
being
something.
A good parent.
fostered children or...
Yeah, she's got many children. She's pregnant. She's got a five-year-old. They walk to the park. The park is like half a mile away. It's in their gated community. It's like picturesque. You walk down a sidewalk to get there. You have to cross two, intersections that have crosswalks. You get to the park. They go to the park.
This is the Norman Rockwell version of pedestrian safety.
The child likes to collect the goose feathers that accumulate by the pond in the park.
Mm-hmm.
They go back home, and the kid wants to go back for more feathers. Half-mile walk. Again, gated community, perfectly safe. The kid doesn't make it there because a security guard stops him, brings him back, and then calls the police, who call child services.
Yep.
Because she's not having any of it. She's like, I allowed my kid to do this. Because at first the security guard's like, you can't do this. And she's like, there's no rule in this community that you can't let a kid.
Show me the rules.
And they said, but it's the law that no five-year-old can be left alone, unattended for any amount of time in public ever. That's apparently the law. Even though Virginia is one of the states that have passed laws that Lenore has advocated for in her role as an activist to get reasonable childhood independence. The assumption is leaving a child alone is not by itself harmful.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they're prosecuting this woman. She got the book thrown at her. She is going to be like equivalent to a sex offender, like on the harm.
She is on the like child abuse registry.
Child abuse registry for letting her own kid walk half a mile in their safe neighborhood to a park.
Yeah.
Like, this is just insane.
I'm just shocked by the – I don't even know what to say. I don't understand how, a judge and jury could come to any of these conclusions.
I mean, maybe that's what the law says. So the judge was like, well, the law says that children at this age can't be left alone. And so as sympathetic as we might be to you, that is what the law says. So it's a problem with just the law being badly formulated.
Yeah. Was this a jury trial?
I think it was a judge.
Okay. Well, I mean, if this was a jury trial, this is like the example for like jury nullification, right?
For sure.
Like the clinical application of the law is manifestly unjust.
You may want us to convict this woman, and on paper we should, but we are not going to do it.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The power of no. Just...
Yeah, no. And I mean, she's studying. Yeah, she's a law student, and so like, this will prevent her potentially from becoming a lawyer, getting her law license.
Yeah, it's going to really mess up her life.
And I mean, so what are her options? An appeal, a pardon? Hope, that would. I mean, this is why we have pardons.
Governor can pardon. Yeah, that would be the best thing to do. Actually, I saw Republicans calling on Abigail Spanberger to do just that. That's the governor of Virginia.
Yeah.
That would be a good thing to do.
Do you think that's something a Democratic governor would do?
If Republicans are going to look the other way on it, yes. Or if they're going to be cool, because, right, the Democrat doesn't want to pardon someone on the sex offender registry or on the child harming registry because they're going to go, oh, you know, what's next? Transgender immigrants are raping our children, blah, 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 blah. So Republicans got to be chill about this.
Relax.
Promise not to run, attack ads against her for she let a dangerous child abuser off the registry. Got to promise not to do any of that here.
Yeah. I'm so shocked by this dichotomy, this contrast between this Lindsay Clancy woman who very well might not be convicted because of, through a mistrial.
After, with deliberation and skill and planning, choking the life out of her three children, one after the other.
No criminal conviction there.
Them waiting in fear for their turn. It's so awful.
And then in this case, a woman letting her child walk to the park.
To collect goose feathers.
And she's the one who gets convicted.
Yeah.
This is I don't know. It's just like sometimes the justice system serves up these examples. And it's just, what else can you say?
Well, the ideas that these laws rest on, that you can't even let your kid walk to the park. It's based on notions of danger to children that are completely unfounded. It's trying to protect children from being abducted by strangers. But stranger abductions of children are the rarest event on earth. Mm-hmm. They virtually never happen. Law and Order or like cop shows or whatever make it seem like kids are being a true crime. Kids are being snatched and sold into sex slavery or chained to a basement somewhere. You know, there's those couple famous cases of those girls that were abducted and forced to live in a bunker or something. Yeah, it's two or three cases out of billions of people. Yep. It never happens. Kidnappings happen. It's custody disputes.
It's always custody.
Always a family member. Mm-hmm. It's always dad or mom takes the kid when it's not they're divorcing or something, or a family member. It's always somebody in the family. It's not if you leave the kid alone in the park, a stranger is going to force him into the van. Yes, it has happened a handful of times, but it is not statistically a likely enough danger that kids should be deprived of playing alone time that older generations enjoyed. In fact, that older generations enjoyed during periods of much higher incidence of random crime.
Right.
On the street, in parks, etc. We are in a lower crime environment.
Yeah.
So,
crazy. I think about like my own upbringing too. A good equivalent case, military family. So I grew up on military bases. So it's a gated community of sorts, right? Yeah. It's five or six. Parents would let you run around and play wherever, right? Yeah. Ride your bike to the park.
Sure.
To the reservoir.
Who cares?
Right? Yeah. I won't say I turned out okay, but like it's not because of the freedom I was given.
I can't remember at what age I was first like basically allowed to be by myself in the neighborhood. I'm not sure it was quite that young, but it was probably pretty close to it. I rode my bike to school. It was about half a mile away.
Yeah.
Every day, beginning from age, I don't even know when. I was doing it for so long. I don't know.
Yeah, like sex. Yeah.
Sure. I think by at least the second grade, I could be at the guy across the street's house or the people who lived in the court behind them. And that's seven or eight. So it's all around there.
Yeah. But now this is a crime. Parents would have been locked up.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes Lenore has covered cases where, the parent takes the kid to the park, lets them play, and then goes somewhere else and then comes back.
Yeah.
So they're playing in a park with people they know in front of adult supervision.
Yeah.
And they get in trouble for that. She's covered cases where they're playing in their own backyard when the parents is not there. It's just insane.
Madness.
It is truly madness.
Madness.
Yeah, Lenore has the stories that just make you go, screw this.
Yeah,
just screw
right,
this.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, she's a real talent.
We actually had two of these this week because there was also the donkey story.
Yeah. Hee-haw, RIP, yes.
Yeah, it sounds silly, and I before I read it, I'm like, this is silly. And then I read it, and I'm like, this is just awful.
It's really it's sad. It's a terrible thing. Yeah, it's really sad.
These cops, where was this, Georgia?
Yeah, I believe it was Georgia.
Cops were looking for a missing person or something.
Yeah, they're trying to find a fugitive or something like that. And they're on this family's private property, their farm.
It's a petting zoo.
Yeah, petting zoo. Okay, yeah. And so there's this adorable little donkey who comes running towards the police officers.
Bing, 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 bing!
Yeah. CJ Ciaramella, our criminal justice reporter, he was the first reporter to get the incident report, and it just reads ridiculously. You know, the cops, like, you know, the donkey was charging at me
in a
like,
menacing way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at the pictures of this donkey.
The donkey is being described as like a super predator.
Right. And even mentions in the police report, like, how it was,
it was a thug-like donkey.
Yeah, which was also, yeah, it mentions in the police report, it was like bottle-fed by the its caretaker, and they just gunned it down. Yeah.
It's sad. So their people are sad, and they're upset, and they have every right to be.
Yeah,
and look, I get it. Okay, I don't even know. Well, okay, the police should not randomly wander onto private property and kill your animals.
Yeah.
Like, duh.
You don't have to join PETA to think that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying like abolish the police in response, but that is bad behavior from those police, and I hope they are disciplined for it.
No, and I'm like, we're not even, you know, we've talked about this before, but like, we're not even advocating that like police need to like have an unreasonable level of, calm or whatever.
Sure.
And when they're faced with threats, right?
Sure.
I mean, to draw an analogy, there was an awful Times Square stabbing, mm-hmm. right? This crazy woman, stabs two people, kills one, a young woman who just had a baby, very sad. And then she's, standing there with like two knives in her hand, and the cops are all around her being like, drop the knives, drop the knives.
Yeah.
She comes at him, and she's not a physically intimidating person, but she did just kill one person.
Yeah.
They tase her, doesn't work, and so they shoot her. And
absolutely
I don't think anyone is saying... Or
I'm
not
sure
many
someone
people.
Is, but not
of
us.
Course someone is saying.
Someone
like,
is saying, but
yeah, I'm no, not saying yeah, the police yeah, have fine. To let the woman stab them,
right.
or they have to wrestle the knives out of her hand.
For
like,
sure,
no, it's an unfortunate situation.
For
but,
sure,
they have to protect themselves too. Of course,
yes.
They have a difficult job,
and they have to protect the people around them.
Yeah,
but
of course,
they don't have to go onto your property and shoot your animal.
Yeah, like, it's just like the. Talk about, like, putting yourself in a situation, yeah.
I saw, like, that Charles Fane Lyman character.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was tweeting about this, like, oh, let's start a database of all the donkeys ever shot by police. Oh, there's only one.
Touch
like,
Fane.
Okay, yeah, this has never happened before. Other animals have been shot. Other pets, dogs have been shot by police.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not saying now this is why we should not have policing. I'm just saying they shouldn't do this, man.
As I said on Twitter, you think he'd be more sympathetic to his fellow jackasses, but
that's pretty good.
Thank you.
I like
Thank
that.
You.
That's good.
Anyway, let's not dwell on
some good reporting by people at Reason this week and every week.
Yeah, very good. Especially this week. So good job to CJ and Lenore.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the state produces these many abuses that we must then cover. But
right, and I get it that like because this comes up with the flock camera argument we were having. Like, okay, there's some number of incidences of police abuse using the thing, but you have to weigh that against whatever good it's going to do. Like, I get that, but at the very least, individual cases of abuse by police officers need to be punished.
Is that not worthy of coverage?
Right.
And, scrutiny?
And the police often have, again, I am not remotely anti-police or anti-doing things about crime, but the police should be like anyone else if they screw up, especially in an unreasonable way, like killing your animal on your own property for no reason or accessing the flock database to spy on an ex-girlfriend.
There should be accountability.
There should be accountability for that. Just like, well, we're the police,
Yeah, and it's very...
You got to break a few omelets if you're making an egg or
this very
whatever,
disingenuous argument that...
Eggs, omelets.
That's how you make an omelet.
Yeah.
You got to break them first.
Yeah.
But this very disingenuous argument where it's like, oh, this is just, minor cases of abuse or whatever else. It's
right.
Like, well, you need the coverage and the public scrutiny
yeah.
in order to build in safeguards and understand the prevalence of these incidents in the first place. So then
right.
just to roll your eyes at any coverage of said incidents is just...
Because
yeah,
then you can do that for anything.
Yeah,
you can be like, well, there's just a handful of incidents of the government censoring newspapers or something or speech it doesn't like. Okay, Yeah. I don't care if there's a handful of incidents. They shouldn't be allowed to. They're not allowed to do it, and we're going to call it out.
Yeah, right.
We're an advocacy organization.
Right. There's already the First Amendment. Okay, well, this is part of enforcing the First Amendment. This is why we have journalism in the first place.
These incidents are part of enforcing, the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. Yeah. So
if you want to just roll your eyes at it, well, fine. That's your prerogative as a serious public policy researcher then. Yeah. So.
Oh, well, that's life. Bad stuff.
C'est la vie, as the French say, right?
C'est la vie. French? We're getting... Why was I thinking about the French? In some because I'm reading The Three Musketeers.
Oh, nice. Okay, very good.
Lot of just dudes wandering around and picking fights with each other.
Yeah.
Fighting for fun. Because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, I think about this periodically. The amount of just like physical violence that was a part of life, especially for men.
Mm-hmm.
Women also at the mercy of physical abuse by men, but also just a lot of men fighting each other at all, always confronting each other violently.
Yeah.
It was like the normal human experience for everyone until us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny too because, like Three Musketeers, like Baroque Renaissance period, or I guess it's like kind of post-Renaissance, where it's like presented as like, you know, this kind of dashing swashbuckling. And it's like, I mean, these guys are murdering each other.
Like all the time the for swords no are really reason.
Thin. The swords are really thin, but they are in fact stabbing each other.
Yeah. And just like, and so many of their fights just don't need to happen.
Right.
They're like, they're walking this way. The Cardinal's men are walking this way. Like, we're not to the point yet where they've uncovered the plot to get the queen or whatever is going on in the novel. Mm-hmm. Like, so they actually don't have reason for conflict with the Cardinal's people. It's just like, oh, you're in our way. Oh, you're in our way. Well, I guess we have to fight now.
On guard.
It's almost like a video game, like a random enemy encounter or something. It's operating on that level.
NPCs.
Oh, while we're moving toward our next destination, we're going to have on average, 3 fights because one will randomly generate every 7 seconds as we're moving in this direction.
It's very good that we don't live under video game logic anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the music changed. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I didn't equip my weapon, so.
Damn. Oh, you just throw a pin at me. You know,
yeah. I'll have to use, I don't know, my weapon is my words because the pen is mightier than the sword.
I
didn't see that coming.
I just brought a sword now.
I did have a couple other things I wanted to run through today.
Oh, good sword pun.
Oh, how about that? We're really cutting it up.
All right, get a handle on it.
So I saw a little bit more. I know we do a lot on data centers, but you're passionate. I'm passionate. You know, Trump said a couple days ago, let data rain.
Yeah.
Which was a great line.
Yeah.
I love that as a let data rain. When he's cooking, he's really cooking.
Yeah.
And everything he said about it is just completely correct because he's even said it like, he said, well, people get to decide whether they want it in their community or not. You know, I'm not telling them what to do. But
you're going to be missing out.
But you're missing out. I would make the choice. I want it.
Yeah.
I think they're really cool looking buildings. They do a lot. Right. We should have them.
Right. Yeah. He likes the big boxy building. Yeah. So it's big.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, his attitude is completely correct, and I think actually this I like that he spelled it rain as in like let data rule, right? Well, because it's a little bit of a double entendre, because it could be like data, you know, of course, no, his attitude is completely correct. People were mad that he called communities that didn't want data centers pouring backwards, but it's like, well, that would be the reasons you're rejecting these facilities.
I mean, we got to build communities that are declining. That used to be a manufacturing town or whatever. It doesn't need to be manufacturing. It can be a rural place. It can be whatever. Got to get something going, you know?
This is the exact kind of land use that works for communities that maybe – why were they manufacturing hubs in the first place, right? Is because you had a lot of cheap land that was easy to turn into a large manufacturing facility that consumed a lot of land. Now we don't build as much in this country. And or use less space for it, whatever. And a data center is a good replacement for your former industrial uses. And is much less impact-heavy industrial use as well. And fabulously revenue-rich for the communities that accept them. But this is why I actually appreciated the president's comments. Because it's an interesting question of how do you deal with this moral panic that is... has been sparked in response to data centers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the housing stuff that I cover, You know, there was a big slow growth movement in the country. We imposed all these regulations on constructing new housing. Lo and behold, the housing is really expensive. So now we're trying to dig our way out of that. And the policy response when it comes to the housing is generally, let's evolve these. The local governments have all these incentives to say no to housing, say no to growth. Let's evolve these decisions to the state level where, you know, the state politicians will be more in favor of growth and they can tell the localities, you can't say no to everything, yeah. Right? Not a bad move. That's worked out in some cases pretty well. But with data centers, because the public backlash is so severe, the state governments aren't pro-growth either, right? It's and so you mad. Can, you're, we are evolving decisions on data centers to the state level, but in a negative way, and that states are clamping down on them. And so how do you fix this? And you just have to let the fiscal incentives and the federalism play themselves out. You know, eventually some communities are going to realize we'll get to rebuild the police station and have more donkey shooters if we let the data center locate
and
here.
It's like, what else are you going to do? Okay, if you don't want a data center, but you want something else, fine. But you got to do something. I thought of a line from Fight Club. It's a very crude line. Mm-hmm. The narrator says, "I want to put a bullet between the eyes of every panda that won't reproduce to save its species."
Okay. What a ridiculous movie.
I know, but choosing, it's like choosing non-existence.
Yeah.
Okay, you can choose that, but then I'm going to stop feeling sorry. Oh, you're fading town, you're dying town. Oh, you got to... Please make the minimal amount of effort to revitalize your place. You're not affirmative action isn't even being required on your part. You don't have to do something. You just have to say yes. You have to give permission to someone else to do something.
Yeah.
That seems like...
And they'll pay you a lot of money if you say yes.
Am I missing why that is such a hard sell? And I was surprised by... This is why I wanted to bring it up again. Justin Amash... And LP candidate this time around, Chase Oliver, had a response to me directly. And then Amash had a bunch of tweets attacking the president, Trump, for saying that he said that, you know, there are perfectly good reasons to not want them in the community.
No.
Which, again, if the community doesn't want them, on some level, I accept that they have to be built in places where the people actually want them. And the third party harms, which we both say are extremely exaggerated.
Minimal,
but
yeah.
To the extent they exist, have to be worked out. But one or the other of them referenced aesthetic reasons, and that was a major red flag for me. Like, okay, somebody else with their property or public property can't sell it to build something because you don't like the way, because the community doesn't like the way it looks. Yeah. That is really a blank check to never build anything ever again.
Yeah, because people have different aesthetic preferences. Whoa.
Yeah.
We can't build this, you know, cutting edge, multi-million dollar facility because you think it looks bad?
Right.
Come on.
That doesn't seem... And
it's not a particularly libertarian concern.
Right. They're pretty principally libertarian people.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I like both these guys.
I like them a lot. So I was surprised to hear that take, and which made me think about how our girl, Rand, would have been build. And I was thinking of what if we did... Data shrugged.
Ooh.
Okay. Let's just one day shut them all off.
Yeah.
Shut them all off.
Go on strike.
Go on intellectual strike against the parasites.
Yeah.
You don't want it? Okay. Shut it off.
The moochers and the leeches. Yeah.
I hope you didn't need to access your ATM today.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to turn it off.
Yeah.
Turn it off. Yeah. Data shrugged.
Yep.
You like that idea?
Yeah. Hopefully you didn't need to use Google Maps or... Yeah. Listen to a Spotify song or, you know, pull up some medical records. Yeah. Or,
why don't you read by candlelight today?
Yeah.
A book, physical book. Still got one of those?
I just read her essay, The Anti-Industrial Revolution, where she is just laying into the degrowthers of the 70s. And that's literally how she starts her essay, is just like this kind of imagined, you know, vignette of this guy living in a degrowther paradise where it's like, oh, you used to read by electric light, but now you have to use candles, but there's not that many of them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a toaster anymore, so because that used electricity, so you got to toast your toast in the oven. And oh shit, it's burned, but you don't have time because you got to take the bus 3 hours away to work. You know, you used to drive, but yeah.
Yeah, that theme pervades, what is it called? Anthem, that novella she has about, it's a dystopia where, you know, overplanned society leads to total stagnation and no technology and the characters need to reinvent electricity and things of that nature.
Well, they need to reinvent the word I first.
Right, first, yes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty great.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the famous jokes. Like, what did the communists use before candles? Light bulbs. Got them.
Actually, that goes into something I wanted to discuss today, mm-hmm. and you actually prepared some good material for.
Oh, well, you'll tell me.
Let's get to this.
Yeah, our pitch meeting.
So the they're rebooting the X-Men again. My God. I'm not sure this is totally necessary.
Oh, I like the last couple movies where it's like set in the 60s or whatever.
Right, so they're rebooting that again.
Okay.
They're undoing it. Those got to be redone again.
All right, well, whatever.
It's a little... Okay. No, I like those too, but I like a lot of that's already happened. Can we maybe do new things?
Okay, well,
can we let
before
it breathe at all?
Before we're these Debbie Downers, let's...
Yes, but they have to... But here's the problem, mm-hmm. is that they want to set it in modern time, in now times. Mm-hmm. But some of the X-Men have backstories that are tied to specific like world events, including, right. most importantly, most notably, Magneto, the villain, mm-hmm. Who is a Holocaust survivor. Mm-hmm. And that is an important aspect of his character. So it was trending on social media that they're thinking of changing what his origin story is. And then, like, I saw some, like, pro-Jewish commentators saying this is about, this is, like, an anti-Israel thing. They can't have him be a Holocaust survivor. And, like, well, no, it's an actual delimitation of that would make him in his 90s now.
Right.
And that doesn't fit the age of the character that they mm-hmm. want him to be. So you have to come up with some other background for the character.
Yeah. Okay.
So I challenged you to come up with some ideas.
You told me to come up with some ideas.
Okay.
I got some pitches for you, boss.
Okay.
If you don't mind, I'll pull up my...
Lay them on me.
My laptop.
New here. Magneto background ideas.
Okay. So these are going to go
Listen
from...
up, Marvel.
Got
to put in your password to try one.
Yep.
Password 1, 2.
That did it. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah.
We're in. Yeah. Okay. So... It's funny you mentioned anti-Israel, people claim this is anti-Israel, because the most obvious thing that you could do is you could make him a Palestinian, or even you could make him an Israeli, right?
Oh.
Survives a, you know, maybe his grandfather or father was a Holocaust denier, then killed in a terrorist attack. He comes to the United States, has this burning vengeance, you know.
Sure.
Or you could also make him a Palestinian, you know, if you wanted to have some sort of, you know, I mean, the X-Men has always been kind of one of the more left wing of the superhero universes. And so like you could kind of make it a free Palestine.
Well, in the original movies very much leaned into it being a metaphor for gay rights.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, that's what's the Omnicause now? It's Palestinian justice.
That's
right.
True.
So I think that would actually be the studio would never do this, obviously.
Yes.
But that would be like a natural, pretty easy thing to do.
Yeah.
OK, so that's number one.
Yeah.
Did you have your own ideas?
I had an idea. I have a serious idea and a silly idea. My serious idea was this is serious, but also just ideological in our direction completely.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make him a survivor of a communist dictatorship. Let's
cool.
put him in. He could be Soviet Union. It could be he's born in the 70s. You know what? He uses his metal ability to greatly improve the efficiency of
Ooh,
the steel mill or
yeah,
whatever in his town.
Yeah.
But the Soviet Commissars don't like that.
They shut it down.
So they send him to a gulag
Ooh,
because he's
yeah.
too special and too different.
Yeah, very good.
And so he's a radical libertarian person. So he comes to the U.S. after the fall of the Soviet Union, but it's still too collectivist. It's still putting limitations
on the
individual.
Oh, so
he
would be kind of you would be a Randian supervillain. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, the studios might go with that because, you know, he's still the bad guy, so he
yeah.
can be free market,
we
right?
We could do that. It could be Soviet or it could be China or, like, Pol Pot or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, hey, a little diversity casting.
Yeah, make him Asian.
Yeah.
Let's do an Asian guy.
Perfect.
Let's do an Asian guy.
Okay.
as I've been known to say.
Yeah, you don't need any encouragement for that. Okay, so here's my second idea. Okay, a little more contemporary. So Magneto is a PhD student who writes a controversial thesis
yes.
suggesting that, you know, human biodiversity is real and that it will eventually result in a, you know, an elite race of humans with special abilities that, you know, transcend normal human abilities.
Okay.
And he's turfed out of the profession.
Okay.
He, of course, writes this because he secretly is
yes.
discovering his
yes.
own powers here.
Yeah.
And so he's canceled,
like James
you know, blacklisted, exactly, loses his job at Google. And so now he's burning with vengeance against all of academia. And,
right.
You know, his foil, of course, is the institutional woke Dr. X.
That is great.
Okay.
That's so great. Yeah. I love that.
Okay.
That's too close to my idea and better. So I'm just going to draw. I was going to say similarly. Yeah. Professor during woke one.
Yeah.
He generates, you know, magnetic fields, mm-hmm. which makes some of his students feel very unsafe,
ooh.
Very triggered.
Yeah.
So there's a complaint made against him, even though he's a very good standard progressive mm-hmm. professor, but they just feel uncomfortable with the magnetic mm-hmm. fields.
Yeah.
And
he's polarizing.
So he's
an attractive professor, but a polarizing one.
So he's put on leave pending an investigation and just becomes more and more radicalized. Kind of a Brett Weinstein origin story.
Yeah. Okay. That's
and
good.
Similarly becomes a crazy person.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think that's an evergreen plot.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was a deep cut. Look that up, people. Evergreen.
Okay.
God.
So I got one more for you
here.
And I'm rather proud of this one.
Okay.
I've worked it out a little bit. Okay. So Magneto is a low-level CIA analyst, you know, hiding his powers that he's slowly discovering the extent of. Mm-hmm. In the late summer of 2001.
Okay.
And as this analyst, he is also warning repeatedly, we're getting all these signals that there's going to be a terrorist attack on the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. We need to do something about this. He's, mm-hmm. you know, brushed off, no, ignored, ostracized in the agency. He gets so desperate on the day of, he goes to the World Trade Center and, you know, like a crazy person is telling everyone, you know, you got to get out of here. Something horrible is going to happen. One of the planes hits the building.
Mm.
He's in it.
Mm.
And, you know, it's there's rubble. There's
right.
And what does he do? He tries to use his powers
to
stabilize
the building.
But, of course, you know, we know jet fuel can't melt steel beams. But he, because he's still learning about his powers, accidentally snaps the girders. And the building comes down on top of him. He is able to save himself. But of course, you know, 9/11 plays out as it does.
Mm.
The agency, because they're terrified of, you know,
the repercussions for
of knowing that this had happened beforehand and doing nothing, fires him. And he, burning with a desire for vengeance against the CIA that's ostracized him and also, you know, his own unacknowledged, you know, psychic guilt about, you know, contributing to this horrible disaster, sets himself up on a revenge arc where he is going to cause the biggest terrorist attack to show them that they can't keep these people safe.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
that's,
you.
That's good.
Yeah.
You did the assignment. Very nice.
So Hollywood,
if
you're listening to Freed Up, and I know you
we
are.
We know you are.
That's my idea.
Those are good ones.
Don't, you know what? I don't need any royalties, but just, you know, a little credit would be nice.
A little credit would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a little acknowledgement.
Just a little, yeah. You don't have to be the New York Times. You can credit other people for ideas.
People probably don't know this. This is true. They just rip you off all the time. But they're
rich get richer.
They're a great newspaper, and
you know what
with
they could
a
really...
great pod... What could they use? A conservative podcast?
Well, not necessarily
hosted
conservative,
by a
right-ish but maybe,
libertarian...
Yeah, you know, maybe someone with some heterodox kind of center-right views.
But not heterosexual.
Well, certainly not.
Yes.
Yeah. We got to, you know, counterbalance Ross Douthat's, you know, uncontrollable heterosexual energy with own refined mannerisms.
Yes. Bespoke.
Bespoke.
Yeah,
there we go.
That's what we call it. Well, that's good advice. We'll see if they take it.
We'll see.
Next up. Speaking of unrepentant heterosexuality, I guess I have one or two more words to say about Milo Yiannopoulos.
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah.
We
never
have to talk about him ever again,
mm-hmm.
or so I hope. Look, I don't like anyone being, you know, the way the immigration authorities.
He was people don't know this right wing provocateur of old during woke one. He was deported.
Right. I covered his antics fairly exhaustively because he was a significant. Figure like Ann Coulter or Christina Hoff Sommers or Charles Murray, who was speaking on college campuses, getting shouted down by students, having the event disrupted, needing to take elaborate security measures to speak.
Someone who kind of perfected this career arc of being a, you know, a self-appointed hate figure.
Reliably, the event would not – for some of the events happened, then they would not happen – look how unreasonable the students are, that kind of
thing. He's a provocateur, yeah.
He subsequently got himself canceled real properly by actually by the by conservatives.
Yep.
Over controversial statements, and then it came to light that a lot of the work he did was ghostwritten by others.
Or I don't know if plagiarized is the right term.
It was just written by other people who then said they were not being compensated. Look, he's a fraud and a con artist, and you know, and then he's basically disappeared from from public life, which is, you know, I think you could feel a certain amount of pity for him.
Sure.
He also completely brought it on himself. He's also had, you know, issues with his personal, not that I care about his personal life, but he's spoken about this. So he's gay, was married to a man, but then decided to become like not gay anymore. We'll see how well that goes. He looks and sounds rather different.
Yeah.
So he was deported.
Yeah.
He's picked a fight with Laura Loomer. She picked a fight with him. She told her buddies in the Trump administration, you know, there's something odd about his immigration papers. He's gone. He's back to the UK. And he, I just saw him on Piers Morgan, you know, talking about the situation. Pretty good interview by Piers Morgan. I will say, Piers Morgan, he does a good job, I think.
Really?
I think he's just really good at interviewing people. I know some people find him very annoying.
Yeah.
But he presses you. Like, he will not let you not answer a question. He'll just ask it over and over again. And I think he has done some of the more effective takedowns of people. He, I mean, he's himself controversial for a variety of reasons, but he does pretty good. He gets – he digs into people. Anyway, so Milo talked about what happened to him. And it sounds like, you know, a miserable experience when they deport you.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they detain you. They shackle you. Whatever. But I don't trust the things that he's saying also, because I someone at Cato was saying, like, this sounds like maybe this was unfair grounds or wrongful grounds for.
But he could just be lying.
He could just be lying. I know him to be someone of like low of deception, of saying things that are not true. Also, it sounded based on what he said. That he came here on either a tourism visa or a work visa.
Yeah.
Well, expired. I know, he's had problems with his work and not compensating people and not doing the work. And then he was converted to a green card or tried to be converted to a green card because he's married to an American citizen, but is now describing that relationship as fake. So,
yeah.
So, I don't know. It sounds to me like it might be perfectly justified grounds for deportation.
Certainly within the bounds of the current law.
Right.
He was a candidate for deportation.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple things I'll say in his defense is, you know, at a certain point, look, I'm an open borders guy, but at a certain point, it's like the government is going to enforce the immigration laws.
Yeah.
And if you're a notable violator of those laws, I mean, what do you expect?
Right.
This is concerning just the basic facts that we seem to know. It's concerning in one level, which is that he was prioritized for deportation because he pissed off the wrong right-wing influencers who then told the Trump administration to take a look at him. And so that there is an element of politicized, prosecution here. It's not quite the right term for a deportation.
But it's not like there can be a right to stay in the country because someone took notice of you, and that's like, I agree that that's kind of a scummy behavior on the people who, just kind of like cop-like behavior, but that doesn't create a right to then not be deported.
No, that's true. I mean, in order to believe that, you would have to default to a more libertarian position of he's okay, a person of low character, but not a physical danger to anyone, and not, it seems, a literal criminal, and so therefore. He's someone who, you know, while I find him loathsome, I don't think like justice demands that he be sent back to the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And so for that, I sympathize too. And I hope this experience has maybe, because he has said some very terrible things about immigration and immigrants.
Yeah.
And,
like he
wanted to masturbate at ICE.
Was titillated by watching ICE deport the thugs and the criminals. But this is what I wanted to get to, because this is an idea that many on the right, I think, are possessed of, or Trump himself was possessed of, that, like, if you're just – we're just going to do immigration enforcement and we're going to get rid of all those violent illegal immigrant criminals. That's who we're prioritizing.
Yeah.
Okay, but the problem is there aren't enough of those.
Yeah.
Like, it is just a false belief held by some on the right that the violent crime problem in America is entirely an illegal immigration problem. Mm-hmm. It is just absolutely not the case.
Yeah.
There are tons of illegal immigrants in the country, mm-hmm. but they're not overrepresented in terms of violent criminals. There are tons of native-born people committing violent crimes. Yeah. Tons and tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just not – if you're only looking for, like, you know, those stories make the news, the Tren de Aragua gang. Okay, whatever. Get rid of all of them.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be running up the scoreboard on deportations by doing that. There's not enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, again, I don't want to get myself in, like, legal trouble by saying something that – because I can't – exactly recall all of the controversies he's been involved in, but I will say that he's been accused of, like, very, like, not paying people or taking credit for people's work. Maybe none of these are exactly legal transgressions, but, like, a long history of operating at the of, like, pathologically deceptive, operating at the bounds of, like, what should be accepted in society, and you eventually got deported. It's kind of, like, bold of you to assume that as we're doing this crackdown on people,
that you would be spared.
That, like, that you're not included in that. I guess you're not a hardened criminal. You're not a violent criminal, but they're taking a second look at people who did shady things.
Yeah.
You very well belong in that category.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, we've seen in the deportation numbers, like, the number of people being deported who've never been charged with a crime is spiked. And so,
right. I don't want to deport anyone who is not, you know, is just working and contributing to American society and has no other.
Arguably he was not contributing.
That's
American
what I'm
society.
Saying. Yeah. He was negatively contributing.
Yeah.
This
does just feel like there's certain moments in the news where, like, it really just kind of, like, bookends eras, right? And I remember, you know, being in college right during his rise, 2014, 2015, where he was kind of, like, the foil for SJWs, as we called them at the time, on campus.
Before woke was the word for it.
Yes, and a fanatical Trump supporter in 2016.
Yep.
And then, you know, just multiple falls from grace, disgraces himself enough to, by the time we get to the second Trump administration 10 years later, even they are like, all right, time to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that does feel like the
end of an era.
The shooting of the last, you know, radical revolutionary or whatever,
right?
Bringing an end to the
this
revolutionary.
This is Thermidor,
yeah. Well,
all
hopefully
right.
That's the last time I have to ever say his name.
Very good.
Well, you had some thoughts on the Tom Hardy rap album.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, we're big Bane fans here.
Oh, okay.
Big
Tom Hardy people. You didn't do the homework.
I did my homework.
You didn't do the homework and listen to this album.
I asked AI to write it.
Yeah. So there's this rap supergroup, which I hadn't been aware of, called Czarface. And it's kind of like, you know, trip hop, type, you know, alternative hip hop, group band, I think gang is the other term you use. And, they released a new album and they have guest, right. You know, it's star studded album. You got, you know, Busta Rhymes and LP and Method Man, but also you have rising star Frankie Pulitzer, AKA Tom Hardy is on the album. I listened to the album. It's great. What's relevant for this show is Tom Hardy does a Bane monologue of the, like, opening lines of Richard III.
That's awesome.
And it's so fucking cool.
So great.
Now is the winter of our discontent.
Yes. Yes. That's great.
Yeah, it fucking kills.
I met Busta Rhymes.
Really?
What was the
circumstances?
Yes. I think he was like the keynote speaker or performer at a criminal justice reform event I attended in D.C. Years and years and years ago. I'm pretty sure it was Busta Rhymes. Yeah, it was Busta Rhymes.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. I know Fire got Killer Mike one year, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But
took a picture with him.
Oh, wow.
Long time ago.
All right, well, you should check out his
2016, 2015.
You should check out his latest work.
Check it out, yeah.
Just for the Bane voice. So yeah,
we're big enthusiasts.
Yeah, maybe we can make that our outro music. No, I'm sure we can. But
yeah,
you know. Yeah. So it was great. Yeah,
that's all you have to say on that.
What more can you say about an album that
check
you
it
enjoy?
Out, guys? Yeah. It's good.
I am always, you know, something that I can't quite. I listen to a fair amount of rap, but like I can never really. Rap groups are strange, right? Mm-hmm. So like you have a rock band or a metal band, like it's very obvious who's in the band and what they do, uh-huh. right?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah, this guy is the bass player.
Yeah,
he plays the bass.
Yeah,
this is the vocalist. He sings, right?
Yeah.
Rap groups, it's, you know, this like this album's a great example where it's just like all these guys are their own artists. They have their own projects, but then they're also
the credits are like this featuring this and
Right, yeah. It's almost like Spotify almost breaks down when you try to like look at individual rappers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's like, you know, like Killer Mike and LP have, you know, Run the Jewels, but then they also have their own music where it's just like Killer Mike and LP together. And it's like, wait, why is that not Run the Jewels, you know? Doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
I haven't
right?
kept up with rap at all. I guess I was familiar, sort of rap R&B, kind of that direction stuff of the 90s. I have some familiarity with, but I don't know what kind of rap they're making now.
No, I mean I can't say that I'm like up to date on everything, but I do like
what's
like a few
to
select
music,
groups.
Man?
Well, all I know is my preferred genres are in terminal decline.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I went to, this was a little heartening. There's certain, you know, there's like certain metal bands I like where you go to the shows and everyone there, including myself, is just getting older and older and older. And then you go to some bands and it's like, oh, wow, there's a lot of 20-year-olds here. Wow. So this has actually managed to find a new following. And it's kind of random which ones it seems like are managed to develop that. And it's very rare. I mean, you know, these bands are not like genius marketers or whatever. It's like it is like just a bubbling up often of like, you know, weird TikTok influencers and Instagram reels will just like pick a particular band to meme. And then it like develops a following. Yeah. Yeah. I saw, this will mean nothing to you. So just continue to look confused. But, I saw, the band Down, which the lead singer is Phil Anselmo from Pantera. So old
not
school.
System of a Down.
No, just Down. Just Down.
I know them.
This is different. It's a separate band.
I found System of Down's music hard to listen to.
It's wacky. one of the guys in Down is Kurt from Crowbar, and this is one of these like old 90s bands, really dirty and sad and heavy, and that's one of these bands that's like has gotten the kids listening to it. So it's very surprising.
Kids these days.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about this show is Phil Anselmo has had some controversies about things he said on stage, racial controversies. And I was happy to see that he did not get political during this concert, although someone in the audience was waving around a Confederate flag. So, but you know, how many opportunities do I have to wave it around? So. just kidding. It was not me. But.
Man, are you gonna call? I'm never gonna call it Lake America. I'm sorry.
No, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I was fine with. I don't know why. I was okay with the
Gulf of America.
Yeah, I mean, we have more of the coastline, right?
Gulf of America is not even in the same ballpark in terms of how offensive this is.
Yeah,
Gulf of right.
Well, you're from the Midwest, so you maybe.
I'm never
going
to learn to call it that name. Anyway, I hate renaming things. Period. I was against renaming Mount McKinley. Stop renaming things. Just leave it the way it is. But Gulf, at least that body of water is like the giant gulf of the Americas. So I can conceive of why we would call it the Gulf of America.
Oh, yeah. All these, Latinists are like, America refers to every... You can't call America America because it refers to the whole continent.
Right, sure.
Okay. Well, now we've changed the name of the gulf.
But Lake Ontario isn't like the most significant lake in America, the way the Gulf of Mexico is the most significant Gulf of the Americas.
Yeah.
So that seems stupid. Like, I won't remember which one. If you just said, oh, Lake of America, I'd be like, which one is that again?
Yeah.
Because it's Lake Ontario.
And this is also just part of a petty and stupid trade war that we've decided to start with Canada.
It's, and it's not named Ontario for the Canadians. It's named it for the Iroquois.
Mm.
So... That's not even, it's like, haha, we got you. It's, no.
Yeah.
So this is a really stupid one.
Got the Iroquois again.
Yeah. The Iroquois are pretty cool.
Yeah, totally. They had the really decentralized form of government.
The Iroquois Confederacy. Speaking of the Confederacy, it's the other one.
Yeah. The good one.
Yeah.
The other good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to snub their legacy.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm not a huge fan of, no offense to any Canadian listeners, it's not my favorite country in the world, but as far as neighbors go, it's like, there could be a lot worse countries to occupy that land. And there's no reason for us to be antagonizing them. And yet here we are doing this nonsense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I don't like it. And some of the tech companies changed it because they don't want to be regulated to death. So they just have to, this is not great stuff.
Yeah.
And then what are we going to do? I said this on Rising. So apologies to anyone who's watching today's episode and being like, wow, you're hitting all the same things. We already heard from you, Robbie. Don't know how to avoid it.
Try working with him.
Just repeating myself. But are we going to do now where when a new administration takes office?
This is like new executive orders. It's just like, we're going to be changing the names all the time.
The names of everything switches. Like it's, there's Thermidor for you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll reset the calendar.
Yeah. Just a running,
first
year revolution.
Zero. Here's again. Yeah. Here it is again. That's dumb.
No. Bad. Yeah. It's just another, it's good when we have administrations, presidential administrations, and they change over after elections. We don't need this view of like every election is regime change and we got to debase all the statues and rename everything and reset the calendar. Like you said, that's a bad development in our political life. And this is just one more sad example of it.
Speaking of bad developments, I have a tweet open in front of me that just caught my eye and thought maybe we should discuss. It's from that Tyler Austin Harper guy who's pretty cool, sharing a letter from a Harvard dean talking about encouraging the professors to not use AI detection software because it will inspire distrust between the students and the professors.
Well, they've earned distrust. And
it's because they're cheating.
Yeah.
Those little shits are cheating.
Yeah.
I totally disagree with that. We should allow AI, but then mercilessly police homework assignments.
Yeah, of course.
Like I don't.
What would even be the point
crazy.
Of the homework? Yeah.
Don't even assign people to write things then if you're going to let them use AI. Like, it's just doing it for you then.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a discussion last week about, whether AI is equivalent to ghostwriting for notable figures who are writing op-eds. And there's, there's interesting arguments on both sides. But if the point of homework and academic assignments is to teach you to do the work, then, of course, AI, destroys that whole purpose. And so, of course, you should police it.
Also, if you have a policy, they have a policy against just having AI write your paper, but they're saying they're not going to screen for it. At that point, what you're doing is just punishing law-abiding students, like the good students. Mm. Because if you're saying you're not going to look, that's just then the good students will not do it because they're honest people.
Yeah.
And the bad ones will do it anyway, knowing they're not going to get caught. Yeah. That's unfair. They should not do
that.
Sure,
of course. I mean, maybe some of the students who are really good will, exceed the AI, but... that's a ridiculous policy. Yeah. I don't even know where that would come from.
We were talking on Rising, Lindsay flagged Zoran Mamdani saying something about not having AI in it's like K-12 schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she flagged it because she expected me to disagree with it, but I actually thought what he said was perfectly fine about not having – I mean, they should – kids are going to have to learn to use AI just like everybody else, but your in-class instruction time should – when you're like learning to read and learning to do numbers, should be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would have to.
And I mean, it depends what we're talking about.
It would really have to depend on the individual use case, right?
Yeah.
Like, I find myself using like a ChatGPT more and more for research purposes. Mm-hmm. And for certain tasks, it's actually very good. And so it would be good in the same way that you were of the age where like they still had to teach you how to use search engines and whatever else, right?
Yeah. Although that's not something they teach. You just learn to do it.
I remember having
you had classes on it?
Yeah. Or like seminar probably dresses them up. Or like, this is what a Google search is. And this is how you do the Boolean search and stuff like that. Yeah.
Did we have that? I can remember learning the Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah.
In library class.
Day. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, we just returned to that very frequently. Yeah, we had a computers class, but it was more about learning...
how to play Oregon Trail.
Yes. I mean, how to like lay out a page if you're going to write a paper, or like some kind of Microsoft Word optimization. I remember doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's there's nothing to that, but to do a lot of Oregon Trail and Carmen Sandiego. Where in the world's Carmen Sandiego?
Okay, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. I liked those games.
Yeah.
Geography knowledge.
Oh,
Which you're the master of. I mean, you
are. I'm pretty good at geography.
You are really imposing. You would find, you would track that pitch down in 2 seconds.
Don't need AI for that.
She's like heisting, like, you know, the Eiffel Tower. She's stuffing the Eiffel Tower into her backpack. And you're like, gotcha.
France.
Oh.
Yeah, if only.
If only.
Now, we played X. I went to school in, like, Idaho or wherever else. And so we played a lot of Oregon Trail because it's a little more thematic, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had dysentery a lot. Yeah.
We actually had a game that was, I think, called Bugdom.
Bugdom.
Humanoid insects was a big part of childhood. Like, there was the Ants movie and the Bugs Life movie. Everything was about bugs for a while.
Mm-hmm.
There was this, adventure game. It was not an educational game. It was just, like, the game that was available for the whatever the computers we had in the computer lab was this. You ran around as an ant or a pill bug or something, and it was it was very hard at the later levels.
Yeah.
Shout out to Bugdom if anybody remembers.
You know, if you listen to some of the like libertarian unschoolers, you know, public school was meant to train you to be a diligent worker in the system, and so clearly this game was part of that movement.
I feel like
you're a little worker bee.
I feel like the computers at the school are always just like a little bit behind.
Yeah, right.
So I wonder if like now they're playing like Halo or something or Grand Theft Auto 3.
You got to learn about the mean streets, or the potential for alien invasion.
Something like that.
What, I don't know if you can come up with an example. I'm asking this on the fly, but do you remember an assignment from school that was like, you'll really need to know how to do this, and it was something you've never, ever used, and even at the time was like, this is stupid and archaic?
I mean, high-level math.
Absolutely. Oh, well, no, that can be useful. That can be useful.
I've never used trigonometry in my life. I've never had to use the FOIL method. I've never had to solve an equation. I've never, I mean, you spend a whole year or two doing that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
X plus four times whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I've never used geometry in any way, shape, or form. I've never, any of the math beyond, I would say that any math thing I learned after the seventh grade, I've never used in my life.
Probably. No, I mean, that's definitely not.
I'm not saying math should not be taught, by the way. I'm just saying, given my career path, I don't think.
I use the most basic form of trigonometry.
Do you?
Regularly. Yes, because so in DC, you have both a grid and then all these arterials that kind of like cut diagonally through the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you know, A squared plus B squared equals C squared, then you know whether you should, walk straight and then turn right, or you should follow the hypotenuse, which is quicker. So,
Has never occurred to me in a million years. Wow.
Not just for
should hats. I spill a bunch of jelly beans on the table and you'll tell me exactly how many there are? That's
zero.
You did it again. Yeah, I don't think I've ever used math beyond like maybe like calculating a percent. Mm-hmm. Which is something you learn in probably the fifth grade or something.
It's helpful.
Basic algebra. I was not good at math. I mean, I was in like the highest math class up until ninth grade when I realized, okay, I'm the worst person. And then I like dumbed down a year every year until by my senior year of high school, I was with the true idiots. And then I was a god among them.
Yeah.
I was just like, A plus, A plus, A plus. They're like, wow, He can solve for X.
They were
worshiping me as like a messiah.
It's like in the Simpsons episode where Bart's moved to a new school and he's like, you know, really behind because they went to a terrible school in Springfield. And so he's put in the like, disabled learners, and he's just like crushing
it. Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. I mean, I've never used any, we're just going down the line of any chemistry or physics.
Yeah.
in the least bit. Chemistry was 10th grade for us. Physics was 11th grade. Haven't used a drop of that.
We got a little chemistry going on right here.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like that. I don't want to say that not knowing, I guess I'm better off that I know like what the kinematic equations are, sort of.
Yeah.
That I kind of know, but like what the periodic table is something I probably should learn in like fifth grade.
Yeah. No, no, I'm giving you a hard time, but I had a similar trajectory. At least I think I did. I don't remember calculus, but I do remember in college, I hadn't done math in forever, and then I foolishly signed up for like a 200 level micro econ class, which was like all math. And it was a rough transition. I took enough Adderall that my pee turned orange, but I got a B. So.
Here's a counterexample. Do you have a like a class, maybe a college class you took like on a lark or something that that you actually have used the knowledge from or that was beneficial? I have one.
Okay.
That it fulfilled like some science requirement or something. I think it was called like History of the Discovery of the Universe.
Ooh.
And it was about focusing on. Telescopes and knowledge of, you had to know like a little bit of science about like how orbit, like what is an elliptical orbit? What's that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
It was a great class. It was a really good class. And, I feel, more edified as a human being for having learned more specifically about, the evolution of looking up into the sky and trying to comprehend what's going on there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
And a major theme of it was how you needed it. If it's a kind of libertarian worldview, there was not enough a contemplation of buying a telescope and looking at into space became more and more prevalent as a leisure activity for the wealthy in the Dutch Republic and in the UK, where there was enough prosperity in society to be like, okay, we're good to go. We're not dying of disease and famine or being invaded. We have relatively stable society now. What do you do? I hear Johan has a telescope. Let's go look through his telescope. So
okay, that's pretty good. Once
things are good enough, we start to contemplate our place in the universe.
Yeah.
Which is a nice idea.
Yeah, okay, solid. I don't remember... This might actually have been, it wasn't a requirement, but I can't remember where exactly in the rubric. So whether it was like a purely elective I took on a lark or just to fill credits or like it was more in my major. But I took a couple con law classes in college and it is actually remarkable just like going through the sweep of like First Amendment cases, Fourth Amendment cases, Eighth Amendment cases, like how useful that is just for like. I took these classes, 12 years ago, and it still enables me to just like kind of generally be up to speed on any major constitutional controversy. Obviously, if you're going to write about it, you need to do more research. But I actually, physical, occupation, that definitely is a search, reasonable expectations of privacy, these kind of evolving standards. It's was tremendously useful. So. Yeah. Chris Shortell was my professor. That was good. Mm. Oh, no, my example of the thing that I was taught that I knew even at the time was stupid was we had a math assignment in eighth grade where we had to the semester-long project was we had to balance a checkbook.
Oh, yeah. We never did any of that domestic labor nonsense.
No.
No, we didn't do any
home
of that.
Home economics.
I remember in sixth grade we had there was a story problem that – just dislodged the entire class because it was like a poorly worded question. It was on an exam or something, but this is sixth grade, so it's not like serious level examination. But it was something like how many, it's some story problem that depended on is it from the character's point of view or from our point of view, whether they were looking to the right or the left. And this one student in our class, I can't even remember his name, he had this fight with the teacher about it that just went on and on and on. And she got so exasperated. But it's like seared into my mind to this day. It was in sixth grade.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
It's funny what you remember from school and what you don't.
Yeah.
Right? They're just whole classes I took that I couldn't even tell you what we read in the class. I don't remember at all. And there are things you remember so, so clearly.
Yeah.
It's wild how human memory works. I mean, you kind of just forget.
The one time you dropped your books and everyone laughed. And,
you remember that?
Yeah, you never leave that.
I remember this book, Academically Adrift, about the crisis of, you know, of higher education. Even mm-hmm. like this is a book from 20 years ago well. That made the point that like people generally forget like 80 to 90% of what they learn and how good a use of 4 years of your life and hundreds of thousands of dollars can it possibly be if you are forgetting like 90% of what you learn?
This is Brian Kaplan's point in the case of education.
Yeah. He relies mm-hmm. or he references that book a lot, I think.
You don't remember.
It's kind of a persuasive point, but I mean, I don't know. You kind of, it sort of makes you a better person, sort of, kind of, right?
I mean,
I don't know. It's tough.
It's funny for us because, like, I feel like
if it's valuable for anyone, it's valuable for you and I,
right? Because
we're professional writers, and
right? Yeah, it's like
we draw on historical parallels and literature.
Yeah, I took a bunch of history classes in college, and also like,
and most of that I remember. I remember that more than other things.
Yeah, and I had some really good classes too, where it's like the professor set a high standard for like written work, mm-hmm. and also like. Had like a lot of like you're gonna write short essays throughout this term. It's like okay, mm-hmm. this is actually quite valuable. Yeah.
Here's an assignment thing that I actually loved doing. I loved this, and I was very good at it, but I have not done it since the seventh grade. Diagramming a sentence. Do you remember doing that? No. Like splitting. Like there's a sentence, and you split. You like draw a thing. Yeah. This is a noun. This is noun and verb. You know, subject, direct object, indirect object, prepositional phrase. You know, you draw that little diagram thing. Mm. You don't remember this? There's like, it's like the sentence is on a line, and then you make a parallel line for the noun and the subject and predicate, and then you draw a little line this way for prepositional phrases, and then the direct like all that stuff. I loved doing that, and I was so good at it. I got. Like A++++. I was that teacher's best student in the history of time at that. I was so good at it. I loved doing it. I have not done it since.
Yeah, no, I
can't quite remember how to do it.
I ain't done any of that grammar.
Yeah. I see where you're going from there.
Yeah,
adjectives went like this. Prepositional phrase went like this. Adjectives went like this. And then you can have an ad because – I always thought it was cool. Adjectives only modify nouns. Adverbs modify verbs, adjectives, and other adverbs.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It's okay. They're kind of the workhorse.
So they have sentence. That's like a mutant with multiple mutant powers, mm-hmm. right? Versus one that just has one power.
Mm-hmm. Very impressive. Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, you would be a great elementary school teacher.
I can get right back into it.
Words are like superheroes.
Ooh, rap is like poetry. I think I would have enjoyed being a teacher.
Yeah, I think it would be fun molding some young minds. And
there was a while where I wanted to be a teacher when I was younger.
Yeah, it'd be nice to be the smartest person in the room, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is nice.
Well,
too,
you are right now, too. You are also the smartest person in the room right now.
Just kidding obviously.
How many jelly beans?
Still zero.
Oh,
yes!
My God. He's too good. He's too good.
Crushing it.
All right. We're having too much fun today.
Yeah. We should end it there. Before...
I think we're about done.
Okay. Very good.
We'll end it there. Good stuff.
This was a fun episode.
Tell us what you wanted to be when you grew up. Yeah.
In the comments or... Mm.
Or wherever. Or just harassing. No, in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm. We'll wake up and you'll be looming over us.
There you go.
That's how I like to greet you most evenings.
Yeah, as my sleep paralysis demon.
Adios, muchachos.